Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Mike Johnson, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We've got Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider, later in the hour. And Barry Enright will join us here in a moment. He won a big golf tournament. He's a pitching coach with the Arizona Diamondbacks organization. And obviously a baseball season was going on as it was supposed to. I guess he wouldn't have been playing in that tournament. But with no baseball, there's still some golf being played. And down in Arizona, it's just like it never stopped with the courses. I don't think they ever shut down golfing in Arizona.
No, keep rolling, I think kept it open. I think they kept like the nail salons open and the hair salons open, massage places. I mean, I think they kept it all open.
Right. It's so weird how some states were just like, yeah, we're going to kind of not do that. Like, we're just going to keep rolling the way that we always have.
Some of the numbers were, you know, a lot smaller, right? So they're just trying to skirt them. Like, I was on a Zoom the other day with Tyson Nash. He was like, yeah, I'm running late. I'm out for dinner. I'm like, yeah, I've been in my house.
What?
Been in my house for 73 days, you know, like he's out for dinner in Arizona. So it is what it is. Unfortunately, there's some people in the hot zones. I kind of feel like we're in one. We're not.
Yeah, but the numbers were down today. So they're still up there. There's still two, I think it was 289 or 287 here in Ontario today. Mm-hmm. But that's still the lowest it's been in a couple of months. So after 4 or 5 days of up around high threes and low fours, all of a sudden it drops. So I don't know. I mean, tracking the numbers every day is
it's depressing.
It can be, yeah. And I have been doing it. You know, admittedly, around 10 o'clock, I'm searching for them. I'm trying to find out what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of detail that come with the numbers, though, either, right? Like, where
that's the thing. Like, where are they? Where are they coming from?
I don't know. The problem
is, where's
the
hot spots? Yeah, but they don't tell us. I mean, Ford said there was some in Scarborough, some in Brampton, maybe in the west end of Toronto were three ones that he mentioned. But yeah, it'd be nice to kind of be able to get a better sense of where they're coming from.
Right.
Yeah.
But it does seem like the GTA and basically Montreal, like Toronto and Montreal, are kind of pushing the numbers, and the rest of the country's done a really quality job of lowering the numbers. So anyway, the NHL had an announcement earlier this afternoon that, yes, the 2014 playoff format is happening. Camps will not open until the first half of July, so we're likely looking at a three-week training camp, and earliest we're going to see games would be the end of July, maybe even into the early parts of August. Two hub cities, but the cities have not been determined yet. The draft lottery will happen at the end of June, so before they actually resume play. And the seven teams that will not be included in the 2014 playoff format, they will be obviously involved in the draft lottery. And then eight other teams will be included, but we won't know who they are until after they lose the playoff round.
Right.
And then if one of the letters that has been assigned to those teams ended up actually winning one of the top three spots, then they will rejig the whole lineup to find out who actually gets that letter. And
right. They'll do a lottery to see which letter applies to which team.
Right,
second
exactly.
Lottery.
Right, which I think makes sense, but you really got to read over it a couple of times, and then you're like, okay, I think I get it.
Right.
Like,
it could all be moved, right? On June 26th, if the top three picks come from the bottom seven teams, then there's only one lottery.
Doesn't matter.
That's all that matters.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, and if you're in Toronto and you're wondering – about that pick to Carolina in the Marlowe trade, I don't think we have clarity on that.
Isn't it top 10 protected?
It is, but, is it possible for the Leafs to be in the top 10 if they don't win the lottery? I mean, let's say they lose to Columbus.
Right.
Are they 12th overall? Or, like, where are they? I don't know. Would it be determined based on who else loses?
Correct.
It depends on who else loses, exactly.
Yes.
Spicy, man.
And the other thing, too, is – And I'm not being negative here. If the Leafs lose, there's a chance they could win the lottery.
Like they could.
They could pick.
Right.
Same thing with the Edmonton Oilers. The Edmonton Oilers could lose in that play-in round and get the first overall pick.
That is the best part of this, is that the Oilers are alive for the cup and for the first overall pick. It is a perfect world scenario. And I guess same thing with the Leafs. Same thing with Chicago. Same thing with a lot of these teams where – you're like, okay, I guess I'm in. Like, I got a chance at a cup, or I got a chance at winning the lottery here.
Right.
So if you're one of those middle teams, This is actually a beautiful setup. Like, in all seriousness, this is great for the Leafs because they were not guaranteed to make it at all.
Right.
There was no guarantee they were going to hold off Florida and get in over the final 12 games. I think they would have, but no guarantee.
Right.
So now you're in. You're in. You're playing. You're playing games again. You're going to have a chance to move on into the round of 16 and chase down the Stanley Cup. But also, you have a shot at winning that lottery, one of the top three picks, so you may be able to still keep your pick this year and roll over the pick that was in the Marleau deal to next year, which would be much of a better option, in my opinion. Right?
Yeah. Like take, otherwise, they're San Jose, right? Like they have the high pick. They're not going to get to keep it. It's gone to Ottawa.
Yeah, right. Exactly. If they hand it to Carolina next year, there's no protections. If it's a weird year and they blow up, you could be handing Carolina a great, great pick. I think you try to – clearly you try to win and move on and hand Carolina the 20th pick or the 23rd pick or whatever. That would be ideal. You chase it. No one's interested in the lottery in Toronto until you have to be interested in the lottery, meaning they lose to Columbus, and then all of a sudden you're involved in that. But if it comes to that, you're praying they end up in the top 10 somehow that they can keep this year's pick. Because you'd have to assume, I would assume, there'll be a better team next year. They won't have as many inconsistencies, and I'm willing to bank on them being further up the standings next year, considering what we know about this season.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty safe bet.
I think. You know, it's the Leafs we're talking about here.
Yeah,
there's no guarantees. But
you're right. It is a safe – it's a safer bet because this year was so inconsistent, you know, and to me, they had the injuries to some key players, a guy like Riley, who is, to me, is a glue guy as well as a superstar. So I think you're right. You push it another year and hope that first rounder to Carolina is in the late 20s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. So we'll get all the details and all the thoughts from Bob McKenzie in about 15 minutes on the NHL's announcement earlier today. Nothing on baseball. I saw Bill Shakin from the LA Times reporting about an hour ago that the PA and the owners are way off on the money issue. And
really?
It doesn't sound like they're even that close on the health protocols either, the health and safety protocols, which is another huge element here that all these leagues have to figure out. You got to figure out the formatting, the scheduling, where you're playing, how it's going to look. Oh, and then also, what are we doing with testing? And how are we going to handle that? So I don't know when we're going to see baseball again. Hopefully soon. But our next guest, if for whatever reason baseball doesn't return, I got to think the tour is in his sights. Has to be. The Outlaw Tour Tournament that he won recently was the TPC Champions Classic at TPC down in Scottsdale. He is a former MLBer and a pitching coach now in the Arizona Diamondbacks organization. Barry Enright joins us now. Barry, how's the golf game treating you these days?
Well, I was taking a few days off because my calves, my hands, and my feet were killing this old guy after five rounds in a row, but it was a fun week.
So if you were playing baseball, I'm assuming this would not have been a possibility for you?
It wouldn't have been. I mean, I've kind of looked at this the last few years. I've had a lot of friends and family members kind of push me to do this. It kind of always worked out where it was kind of in the summer months where either I was playing baseball or I was obviously last year coaching baseball. And, you know, I never also knew if they just thought my golf game was good or I was just not very good at baseball anymore. So I couldn't determine which one was which, but it just never lined up with scheduling purposes and with the crazy times that we're in now. And it kind of worked out, and it was fun that it did.
Barry, is this not going to be just a one-off? Are you going to continue to pursue professional golf, play in these tournaments? And what were your nerves like? You play the majors. You've been in big moments. Were you nervous playing golf?
You know, I've had a lot of questions kind of what's next. Obviously, I still have an obligation with the Diamondbacks as of right now, but I passed on this next week, which they just started today at Southern Dunes on Outlaw Tour, but kind of looking into – I love it actually down there. I used to live down in Chandler, Arizona, pretty close to the course within 15, 20 minutes, if you can be close to that course because it's out in the boonies, but kind of fits the game well. So I wanted to play, but just with a few things logistically, I wasn't able to do so this week. Yet we're kind of discussing with a few people and just possibly going forward with a little bit of this. And it brought some juices back, brought some competitive nature. You know, I got to see it through a different lens last year through the eyes of my players, and it was a pretty fulfilling, a pretty cool experience to, you know, not, I guess, be that guy on the mound, but be able to see it through their eyes on the mound. But it's obviously different when you're doing it yourself. And so this past week brought a lot of juices, like I said, coming back, but a lot of good ones. I remember kind of pitching and how sometimes those nerves overtake you a little bit. And I think I drew a lot from my playing days and a little bit, obviously, from coaching last year to be able to help me. And ironically, I didn't have a lot of nerves this week, other than maybe the first tee shot of every day. Even actually going into the playoff, I didn't like how I bogeyed two of the last three holes on the final day on Thursday. I thought I actually hit decent shots. It just that sometimes that's golf or that's life. But from the nerve standpoint, I actually just kind of more enjoyed the moment than let the nerves kind of take over.
Barry, did you feel for Tom Brady the other day in the first five or six holes watching him chop it around?
I think people were getting upset with me with some of my tweets because I was pretty hard on him, but I was getting a little uneasy. I'm not going to lie. I was watching him. To see him human was one element, and then just to see it keep snowballing until him obviously hitting that ball in for birdie from, you know, middle of the fairway, I was starting to get a little of that nervous energy more than I ever did through the whole week of golf, just watching that display. And just to see him on, like, obviously on the tee box, asking questions, being a little awkward, and it just never bringing out a driver. The guy would play par fives, and he would never hit a driver. That's the sign
terrified.
To me that
he was terrified.
Some nerve and very, very terrified out there.
Yeah, that means the last time he played, he could not hit a tee shot anywhere close to the fairway. And now with the cameras around and Tiger and Phil staring at him and Peyton, he wasn't even going to attempt that. We're chatting with former MLB pitcher Barry Enright, and he's a pitching coach in the Arizona Diamondbacks organization, but he won a big tournament on the Outlaw Tour. What is the Outlaw Tour? Tell us about that, Barry. Like, it's where does it rank, and what kind of competition were you playing against over the weekend?
You know, I played a practice round to go a little bit into it. I played a practice round on Monday at nine holes with a guy named Matt King and a guy named Ryan Whalen. I believe Matt is actually a former NHL guy from Toronto, I believe is where he's from. And so I don't know if you guys know that name. He played, I think, in the New Jersey Devils farm league or team, maybe in 2010, 2011. But got to play with him, talked about his story a little bit, kind of going into golf. He's been playing on, like, the Asia Tour, Latin America Tour, Corn Ferry Tour, things like that, and was playing in this tournament. And then Sam Triplett, who's Kirk Triplett's son, a 17-time winner, I think, on the PGA Tour. He was the one I faced in the playoff. And then a guy named Dylan Wu, who's Corn Ferry, fifth on the money list. And there's quite a few guys out there, which before the tournament I didn't know. And if I'm being honest with you, I was just going into it and just going to kind of prove that baseball players can golf a little bit too, and not really thinking of what's next. And so the Outlaw Tour, I think, has been around since 2016. I've kind of kept in contact, even just through social media stuff, not really being in the golf world over the last few years, trying to make a tournament event, just never working out like we discussed before. But I think it's, you know, one of the many tours that I know Arizona provides. I know they've talked about, you know, having sponsorships and things like DraftKings and wanting to make this something bigger. Yeah, I know it's like kind of a feeder into things like Q School and Corn Ferry Tour and along those lines. But if I'm being honest with you, I know how to kind of play golf, how to manage myself out there emotionally. I don't know a lot about the golf world yet. I'm excited to kind of figure a little bit out.
Barry, you said that baseball players can play golf, but is it more likely that pitchers can play golf? Because every time I turn around, I see another pitcher being great. Like, how often do the starters play golf during the regular season when they're playing baseball?
Well, we get a minimum of 4 days off in between.
Minimum.
Starts. So we go, yes. You know, some days when we have an extra day in the week or extra day off, you obviously get 5 days off in between starts. It's always the starters. It's not as much the relievers because they can pitch any day. So we have that routine, and we usually, I would say, go on the road trip. You find your golf course is where you're at. You play two or three times in between, maybe, you know, depending on weather and the work you're kind of getting in. But at home, again, you're playing two or three times in between starts, and baseball season was always the time that I actually played most, because obviously coming home either with family now or, you know, obligations of even playing winter ball when I did, going down to Mexico at times, there wasn't as much time for golf. And so during seasons, you know, whether it's minor leagues or big leagues, was where most of the golf was played, and just not the competitive rounds, I guess, that potentially come now.
Do you travel with your clubs? Which is amazing if you don't.
Yeah, coaches liked it. I remember Mike Socha hated it. We always had to keep it away from Socha. Kirk Gibson kind of understood it with the Diamondbacks. We still kind of snuck it around a little bit. I think it's one of those things, if you're pitching well, they don't care. If you're sucking, right, they're going to be pissed.
Right, exactly. You blow up, you know, you get pulled in the first inning. You better not have a driver in your hand the next morning.
Yeah,
I think that goes without saying.
Pretty pissed.
Yeah,
I think Cespedes had one of those things, right? Cespedes got hurt one time playing golf, mm-hmm. and it wasn't that New York media got him pretty good. But, yeah, you better not be on the shelf or on the DL and playing or getting kicked out in the first inning and staying playing golf the next day.
No kidding. Well, good luck with this, Barry. I mean, hopefully we're playing baseball again soon, but if that doesn't happen, I mean, who knows? Maybe the golf career is going to take off for you, and we'll be tracking you, buddy. Thank you for doing this.
I really appreciate you guys having me on. You guys have a great rest of your day.
You got it. There he is, Barry Enright, former MLB pitcher and pitching coach in the Diamondbacks organization, winning a big event on the Outlaw Tour down at TPC in Scottsdale, which is a great track.
Yeah, it's like, you know what? I used to live right around the corner, but it made me think of when I got traded from Toronto to Tampa, and I got traded in February, and of course Tampa was going to be out of the playoffs, and so I'm picturing me arriving at the airport, and there'd be a couple of media members like there would be in Toronto, right? So I was debating, should I bring my clubs to Tampa with, I'll have my bag, some clothes, and some golf clubs, or would that be the wrong message to send first time walking off the plane to meet the media? You know, hockey gear in one hand, golf clubs in the other. But so I chose not to bring them. I guess I could have, though, because, of course, there was no media there to meet me when
right,
I got
you get
to the
down
airport.
There, nobody.
Nothing.
Yeah, just not even a limo
Tampa's
driver.
Airport. No, I'm calling a cab, Gerard Gallant style, trying to get to the hotel.
Right. Yeah, you should have mixed in the clubs. How quickly did you get those shipped down? You must have shipped those down quickly or bought a new set.
Yeah, my dad was on his way down the next week, and he made sure to bring them for sure.
That's tough. That's tough. It's a tough message, though. You're right. Like, you got to hide stuff from the coaches and the general manager, especially when you're not playing well. Like, if things aren't going well and he's seeing you know, either bring the clubs or going out and – you know, you're caught out late or there's stories about you enjoying yourself. Like you're hiding in the room a little bit. You're hiding in the dressing room. It's tough.
Bettman and Daly, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, the commissioner and deputy commissioner of the NHL are now speaking to all of the media and giving more details on testing. I've noticed that they're being questioned about that. And Ryan Rashog tweeting out that Gary Bettman has said, upwards of 25,000 to 30,000 tests could be needed to pull this operation off at a cost that could be in the millions, and the NHL is going to pay for that. That's not no one's going to hook them up for it. That's going to be their own money. And I guess they said once they get to the phase four, which would be when games actually resume, daily testing. You know, tests every
that's
night.
That's what matters.
Absolutely, every night they'll get tested, and the results will be available. They believe by the next morning. So they clearly have some sort of relationship worked out or some sort of agreement worked out with a testing company, you know, like somewhere where they're going to send the tests, and they believe they'll get the results within 12
overnight.
Hours, I guess.
Yeah,
that would
don't you need – but you can't be overnighting swabs and then to a facility that's – don't you need that set up in the hub city or have an on-site test that gives you the results from the cube
I guess
or whatever?
So. Yeah. I guess, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. That would seem more reasonable, but I thought I read that the NBA's been, you know, brokering deals with all these different companies, and which would suggest they're shipping them out. But maybe that's only leading up to it, as opposed to once they actually get to, you know, boots on the ground, then maybe those testing companies will come with them.
Yeah, I would imagine they'll bring a lab with them. Like I'm reading Rashog's comments. Daly says players will be tested every evening and we'll have results by the morning. So, you know, that those companies will be brought in to make sure that those tests are worked with through the night.
So there you go.
Yeah. And it makes you feel a little bit better about it. If you like every night you're going to be tested. And if you trust the test, every morning you're going to wake up and know exactly who's healthy, and hopefully that's everybody. If not, and also one more note too, Bill Daly just mentioned, Homeland Security assigned an order in the States making professional athletes essential workers. So that opens up a whole new freedom of movement and what they can do in the States.
Right. Well, and there you, and I wonder what that, what kind of implication that has on Canada, where, you know, essential work, that would answer the idea that essential workers quarantine. Are allowed over. Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily factor into the quarantine situation, and a 14-day federal quarantine that is currently required by our government. But we don't know where we're going to be in a month and a half. You know, hopefully we're in a much better position as a country a month and a half from now.
Agreed.
And I expect that we will be if we continue to trend in the direction that we're going in. All right, Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, will join us. We'll get his thoughts on what was announced today, the biggest news items. We'll get him to break them down from his perspective and what else we still need to have answered. What are the big questions that are still hanging over the resumption of play in the National Hockey League? We'll get those answers from Bob McKenzie next. All right, so the NHL made an announcement earlier today confirming what we already knew, that there was going to be a 24-team playoff format, but they just locked that in stone, and there's going to be a play-in round, effectively, featuring 16 teams. The top four teams from each conference will play a bit of a round robin to reseed picks, or I guess slots 1 through 4 in the playoff bracket. That said, we don't know if it's going to be a bracket. They may actually reseed after they do the play-in. But there was an announcement. I think what needs to come out of this is they're committed to playing. They still have to work out a lot of details. There was still a lot of stuff that wasn't answered. But the NHL wants to play, and they feel like they're going to get there. And we're likely looking at end of July, early August before we have games. And the draft will happen after the season comes to an end and a cup is awarded to a team. And to get his thoughts on what we heard, what we didn't hear today, here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Bob McKenzie. What do you feel better about the situation in terms of information today than we did yesterday, Bob? Or what do you take out of the announcement today?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can try and crack this nut. But I guess what I would say is this. The very first thing that jumped out at me was when they said the training camp, phase three, won't occur until, at earliest, the first half of July. That gives you a window of July 1 to July 15th, I guess. But what that tells me is if we're going to have a three-week training camp, and that's sort of been the presumption all along, that that if it's a three-week training camp and it starts on July 1st, you're not getting a play-in game until, you know, more than 3 weeks into July. And if the training camp doesn't start until the 8th or the 15th, you're not getting a play-in game until the end of July or beginning of August. So it kind of starts to set a little bit of a time frame here. Your best case scenario, absolute best case right now, nothing goes wrong, everything goes perfectly. You're doing play-in games late July, and you get playoffs starting the beginning of August. And if that's a, you know, 6 to 8 week process, that's August and much of September. So it gives you sort of a sense of what the hockey universe would look like in terms of timing if everything were to go well. And that's the best case scenario.
Right. And it sounds like they're committed to 82 games next season. And
yes,
it may start as late as January 1st or the beginning of January next year.
Yeah, that's what Bettman said. And if, and you know, if they're going to play 82 games and it starts January 1st of next year, Ode's going to be looking forward to going to that Stanley Cup final in July.
Right. Oh, yeah. We love that.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That makes me happy.
Or maybe August.
We'll see.
Yeah, who knows?
Talk about traveling with you. Talk about traveling with your clubs. That's where you know.
It'll be a tour.
Exactly.
Bob, when we know that so much of this is about content, revenue, why is there still debate about whether the first and second round should be 5 or 7 games? You think once the actual playoff starts, they don't care about how late it goes? We just said they might wait till January to start. So why would they not just go 7 rounds, all four rounds, for 7 games for all 4 rounds of the playoffs?
Well, I think originally, and again, I'll be corrected if I'm wrong, but my understanding is originally the NHL put forth best of 5 first round, best of, I should clarify, after the best of five play-in, or the qualifying round, as they're calling it. The NHL, I think the initial proposal of the players was best of five in the first round, best of five in the second round, best of seven in the conference final, best of seven in the Stanley Cup final. And I think it was done mostly just like, hey, pitter-patter, let's get at her. We may not have a lot of time here. Let's not drag this thing out longer than we need to. And if we're going to cut corners, it's better to cut the corners in the first and the second round than in the semifinals and the finals. And my understanding, and again, I stand to be corrected if I'm wrong, is that the Players Association, in their discussions with player reps, said, we'd like to try and maintain the integrity of the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's always been, or at least modern times, it's always been four rounds, best of seven. You know, let's keep it at that. And so I think they're still trying to sort out the expediency of shortening up those first two rounds versus the integrity of keeping it best of seven.
We have Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. So I began the show at 4 in a somewhat skeptical tone of what we would learn this afternoon, admittedly. And I just figured, knowing Bettman and following him for as long as I have, and we all have, he's not a guy who's going to give you anything he doesn't have to give you, and he's not going to say anything that he isn't 100% certain of. And I kind of juxtaposed that with what we read and what we heard out of Devin Dubnyk, speaking with The Athletic. And Dubnyk is the player rep in Minnesota. And Dubnyk said recently, hey, we haven't agreed to anything other than the 24-team playoff format. We have not knocked out the details on anything. So what I'm interested in, and I'm hoping you can give me some clarity on this, Bob, is if the players don't feel like they've signed off on anything, why can Bettman say two hub cities? Why can Bettman say this is going to be the testing protocol? Why can Bettman say, anything that he said today outside of the 24-team player format or playoff format if the players haven't signed off on it?
Well, I think there's an inherent belief that they'll get it done as they need to. And I think technically Dubnyk is correct that what the Players Association voted on, this return-to-play format, is the format. But there's also the implied, well, we're putting a format together because we all want to play. And yet, when it comes down to the final analysis of the safety measures, of the details on what our family's going to be there with them, are they not going to be there with them? If they are there with them, what are the circumstances going to be? There's a lot of that stuff that needs to be fleshed out. And ultimately, too, there's a financial aspect to all of this that's really, really important. A lot of players want to know, if it's possible to know, what are the financial implications in terms of the escrow for next year and the CBA and what have you. So it's kind of go as we feel. You know, there's nothing is carved in stone, but I think there's a good faith belief on the part of Bettman and the Players Association that absent, you know, some sort of disastrous end to negotiations, everybody's interested in trying to get these games back on, that it's in everybody's best interest to do that. The other side of it, too, is even if Bettman is 100% confident the players will ultimately agree to whatever needs to be done, if you're the Players Association or Devin Dubnyk, you're going to say, oh, hey, just don't assume anything. This is a negotiation. And you don't give up all your leverage in a negotiation.
Bob, did you make sense? I mean, we were trying to clarify and clean things up on the draft. It seemed pretty, once we read it two or three times, it seemed pretty cut and dry. I read your Twitter feed. How were you at interpreting it and really how it's looking for moving forward with the potential, you know, top seven, and then, you know, the eight teams that have a letter beside them?
Yeah, in its most basic form, the draft lottery is still the draft lottery. So for those bottom seven teams, and especially the Ottawa Senators, who still have their own odds plus the San Jose Sharks odds, they got a 25% chance of getting the first overall pick. You know, in many respects, nothing really changes for those seven teams. They're going to the lottery with the same odds they would normally go into. The difference is we don't know who's at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15. And yeah, they all get letters now, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. Fair enough. And you can argue about whether you believe the Pittsburgh Penguins or the Edmonton Oilers if they lose to Montreal and Edmonton, respectively, in the play-in round, whether they deserve to be in the lottery or not. And you can get hung up on the math. It's a 12.5% chance, equal chance for all of those teams in terms of their lottery opportunities once the original lottery is done. In other words, if the first pick and the second pick and the third pick all end up going to teams that are in the bottom seven, there is no second phase lottery. Mm-hmm. We don't need to know. It's all done on points percentage, inverse order of points percentage. Now, if, you know, the flip side, and this is the most extreme case, and this is where it would get really bizarre, would be that the number one pick, the number two pick, and the number three pick all get awarded based on the draft lottery to teams that have letters beside their name. And then you've got the first pick, the second pick, and the third pick up for grabs, and you've got eight teams that didn't win in the play-in round, and they've each got an equal 12.5% chance of getting that first overall pick. And then the numbers actually go up after that, because if one of those teams won on a 12.5% chance, they would then come out of the second and third picks, and those other teams now their odds would escalate and so on. So that part of it gets really complicated, and people are kind of bending themselves in a knot trying to, this isn't right if Pittsburgh does this or Edmonton does this and whatever. But at the end of the day, on June 26th, we're going to have the exact same draft lottery we've always had. And then it's just a matter of plug and play in terms of which teams you slide into the spots.
Bob, any reason why June 26th for the draft lottery? It seems like now that it has been decided, you can do this anytime you want. You just run maybe a couple of weeks to promote it, whatever. But why then? And also for draft prospects, especially European ones, they might be back playing in the European clubs, which will have started in some of their countries before they're even drafted, and how that will all work out.
Yeah, I'm not sure on the latter part, because you're right. There could be European teams that are playing, and the season might not start till January in the NHL or December. So I'm not sure that would have to be a negotiated thing in terms of IIHF transfer agreements and that sort of thing. We don't even know if junior hockey is going to be playing in the fall without fans in the stands. I don't know that they can. So, I mean, it's an unprecedented situation. So I don't know, you know, could it be Alexi Lafreniere's not playing anywhere when he comes to the National Hockey League in January or December? But quite aside from all of that, why have the draft June 26th? You're absolutely right. The draft lottery, rather, June 26th. You're absolutely right. You know, and there are a lot of teams that said, don't have it on the June 26th. Wait until the play-in round is over. Have it between the play-in round and the first round of the playoffs. And then we don't have to worry about phase one and phase two of the draft lottery. We can just take the 15 teams, have a lottery, and that's that. The reason it's being done June 26th is basically to appease those bottom seven teams. Those bottom seven teams, for all intents and purposes right now, as far as marketing and business goes, they're out of business, which is to suggest they've got no games to play. They're not in the play-in. They're not in the playoffs. They don't know when the draft is going to be. It could be October. It could be November. It could be December. They have no idea. And right now, if you're in Ottawa and you got a 25% chance at getting the number one overall pick, it would do the Ottawa Senators a world of good for their fans to know that they have that number one pick, or at the very worst, they're picking number five and number six in this year's draft. So I think it's just to allow Ottawa, Detroit, Jersey, Buffalo, the three California teams, some degree of certainty as to where they're picking in the draft, allowing their scouts to be able to make some analysis of how they're going to go about strategy for the draft. And in the meantime, sell some hope to the fans. Hey, we've got if Ottawa ends up with the first and second pick, we've got the first and second pick. That'll play for a long time. And the sooner they do that, the better for teams like Ottawa and Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to build up the lottery for sure, and they're dying for it. It'll be heartbreaking if they don't win it, though. I mean, if all three teams, all the top three spots go to teams that are going to be playing, it'll be an absolute disaster.
Oh, that'll be a killer. That'll be a killer. Now, the flip side is if all three go to the bottom seven teams, then it was much ado about nothing.
Right.
But the other reason, and you're right, there's no question, from a television perspective, that's the other reason to have the draft lottery.
Yeah,
June 26th.
Yeah, you're looking for content.
The draft was supposed to be held in Montreal on June 26th. So now on NBC Sports Network in the States, on Rogers in Canada, they're going to be able to have a show. And people are going to watch it and be excited by it.
So Daly and Bettman still speaking right now, and I'm just picking this up on Twitter, that Bill Daly's saying teams cannot sign a new player for this season. In other words, if you sign a European player, a player that was playing in the KHL, right, there was some, I guess, indecision there or some rumors that maybe they could be included into this year's roster. Daly is suggesting as of now that will not be the case. So,
and that's interesting too, because that affects a lot of teams. Alexander Romanov of the Montreal Canadiens, he signed a contract that didn't have a start date on it. So now if the NHL has ruled on that and there are no grievances from the PA or anybody else, then Romanov won't be starting until next season in the National Hockey League. Same thing with Kirill Kaprizov of the Minnesota Wild. And there's others like that.
The Leafs signed two guys out of the K.
Yeah. Letton or whatever.
Letton and I don't remember his name, but there's a Russian out of the KHL as well.
But in those instances,
yes,
yeah, in those instances, if I'm not mistaken, they wouldn't have been eligible to play in the playoffs anyway. Because you need to be on a team's reserve list at the trade deadline in order to be able to play in the playoffs. And when you sign a European free agent at the World Championships, for example, and if you're, let's say you go to the Stanley Cup final or conference final late May, early June, and you've signed somebody that played in the World Championships and you want to bring them over, you can't just put them in the lineup. So that part of it's not different. But under normal circumstances, Alexander Romanov and Kirill Kaprizov, the two examples I just used in Montreal and Minnesota, because those guys were on the reserve list, they were drafted by those teams, and they were on the team's reserve list, they normally would have been able to, if signed, they would have been able to get into the playoffs. That's my understanding. I could be wrong.
Bob, I was going to ask you about extra players. Like, you know, you got a 23-man roster. What I keep hearing is you got to add at least another 10 players on that, just based on you don't have a minor league system, you don't have junior players playing.
Right.
You know, what are you hearing a cap at 35? Are you hearing 33, 10 extra? What is kind of the rumblings on, you know, players, reserve players, I guess you call them, being available in the event that you have a deep run and you have injuries?
Yeah, I've not heard a specific number other than anecdotally. I guess the way I should phrase it is this. I don't know what the precise number will actually be. I had heard that it was going to be 30. So instead of a 23-man roster, it's a 30-man roster. And obviously, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, somebody, but there's no salary cap in the playoffs.
Right.
And now that the regular season is concluded, nobody needs to worry about the salary cap anymore. And nobody needs to worry about the four recall rule, because they're just, as we talked about, they're going to have an expanded roster for these playoffs or play-in and playoffs.
Yeah, I'm again tracking some stuff that Bettman's talking about online, and he was asked about the possibility of fans returning in 2021, and he said, quote, our hope is we'll be able to have fans there, end quote. I could see that being a sticky situation if certain teams have the ability to allow fans in and other teams don't, based on revenues and based on who's making money and who's not. Like that, I know that's kicking the can way down the curb, but way down the road. But man, right. what if you're allowed in half the markets, those owners can make money, and the other half, like Toronto, New York, the big boys who have been carrying this league for a long time can't. I could see that being an issue.
That, you know, and the NHL doesn't love revenue sharing, but it has done it when it's needed to.
Right.
As part of the CBA. So that door could potentially be opened if that's the case. And you're right. I mean, you know, nobody knows what the landscape is going to look like in terms of fans being at the rink. But, you know, NHL franchises are game planning for everything from full houses to not having anybody in the stands to being able to, you know, do a quarter, a half, three quarters, a third, whatever the case may be. So We'll have to wait and see how all that plays itself out. A vaccine would be helpful. I'm sure O's taking the night. That's why O's not here tonight. He's taking the night off.
He's in the lab.
He's working the vaccine to get that done.
Yeah, he's the vaccine dummy. He's being injected. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
But hopefully it's all good for our buddy, the O-Dog. But, yeah, he needed a week off. It's been a tough run for him. So he's just, you know, he'll be good. By next Monday, he'll be fresh. He'll be ready to rock. And I'll have more answers for you at that point, I'm sure. Good seeing you, Bob, as always. And we'll do it again soon. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, boys.
Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider. So there you go. Yeah, I think 24 teams, draft lottery, draft at the end of the season. That's kind of what you need to know. It sounds like the testing protocols will be rather substantial come playing time, which you would expect. Two hub cities, we don't know which ones, don't have exact timelines, but likely playing games end of July, early August. So some clarity, clarity. And there's still a lot more to be determined, but at least we're moving in the right direction.
I agree. And I thought I read in the notes there, too, that Daly said they're looking at if you are in a host hub city like Edmonton or Vegas, that potentially you wouldn't be playing in that hub. They'd move you to the other hub.
Just I don't think that makes any sense. Like, who cares? Like, is Edmonton going to get a big
That's perception. Like, they're worried about optics.
Yeah,
but
I think
the guys
so.
Don't have to stay in the hotel anyways. So you're staying in the JW Marriott in downtown Edmonton, not your house anyways. I don't know. It seems to me for interest, you'd be better served having the Oilers playing in Edmonton and having at least some sort of energy around the fact that their home team is there than you would putting the Eastern Conference in Edmonton and the Western Conference in Columbus. Like that's just trying to outsmart themselves because there's going to be no advantage at all.
I agree. I asked that question last week, and it sounds like the league is at least thinking about it or chewing on it that there may not be a perceived advantage, a slight advantage of something, so they want to take that away. I don't know. They're just chewing on it.
You know what though? One aspect at the World Championships, the highest ranked team in like the world rankings gets the best dressing room. So one thing like what is it? St. Louis in first place in the West. Would they get the Oilers locker room? That would be great. I mean, to keep it fair, that's probably what they should do when they rotate through the games. But that might be the only thing about playing at home that if you think you're going to get your own dressing room.
I also think, like I've said before, if you have two hub cities in the West, then you can't split up Vegas and Edmonton. Like they're both in the same conference. So one of them has to be at home. So that would suggest they want to do ideally an Eastern hub and a Western hub. But then what? The Eastern teams are playing in the West, and the Western teams are playing in the East.
Yeah. Their fan bases will want early games. You don't want Pittsburgh having to play 10 o'clock games if they can otherwise play 1-4-7.
You can't. It's not going to happen. The Maple Leafs are playing at 7 o'clock when they play. I can guarantee you that. They're not playing at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
You don't want any Eastern team playing at 10 o'clock in the first round.
I think it'll rotate, guys. I think you'll see afternoon games, even regardless of the Maple Leafs or not.
I'd be shocked if they don't say, like, the Leafs, that is the moneymaker, and the rights holders have lost a fortune here. I would be shocked if the Maple Leafs didn't play every game at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Shocked. I don't care if they're playing in India. I think they'll play at 7 p.m. Eastern time.
Time shift that thing.
I don't disagree, but I think it'll be, non-biased. You know what I mean? Like, I think that they will play afternoon games. And if you've got to get three games a day in, it may not be perfect at 7 o'clock. You may be 6 o'clock Eastern or 9 o'clock.
I hear you. It's all about money. That's where it should be. That's where it should be.
It's all about ratings.
It's about ratings and money. You're right.
And listen, NBC has a big say in that. And in the States, the Leafs are way behind Boston and Pittsburgh and Chicago. Right. So maybe we'll the Leafs do get bumped down because of that. But I could tell you this. The guys up here, they're fighting for 7 p.m. Eastern time for the Maple Leaf games. I can guarantee you that. I think
Agreed.
We all know that.
Yeah.
But it's not a perfect world, so it may not be a perfect situation. And that could be kind of cool. Like maybe if they're playing a midweek game at 4 in the afternoon, it would feel like a baseball playoff game, right? Like the Jays, you always play the ALDS, NLDS at like 12:30 in the afternoon, 4:30 in the afternoon. And that would be different for sure. People are home anyway. Anyway, we'll come back and wrap this up. There has been news and notes that have been offered up courtesy of the NHL, and we'll try to put a bow on it, and we'll tee up the show tomorrow. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN. All right, so the NHL made an announcement today about their 24-team playoff format, their draft lottery, but there's still a lot of questions to be answered. You know, there will be two hub cities, but which ones will they be, and where will they be? And it sounds like Bill Daly and Gary Bettman, they're landing on pretty thick right now that if Canada is going to hold to the 14-day quarantine once you enter the country, then they will not be included as options for hub cities. Yeah. That's where we stand.
Yeah.
As of today, it might change in a month. Who knows?
But you're right. Like, Brian, that's the one thing. This is all a moving target. And we just saw the U.S. sign that order making, you know, professional sports an essential service.
Which is so goofy when you think about it.
But honestly, dog grooming is essential service. Like, who cares about dog grooming? That's an essential service?
Dog
seriously?
The dogs do.
I know, seriously.
Dogs.
Can't get a haircut
outside
here, but worry about your dog and how matted their hair is. So, I believe that they will be able to, like, within a month, you'll probably see something shift on that.
I would believe
that people smarter than us will be sorting this out. So, but it is the NHL. It looks like they are laying a little pressure out there.
Yeah, they're both sides are playing leverage games, and that's going to happen. But we'll see. We'll pick up on this tomorrow. Johnny, you're back tomorrow, right, buddy?
Yeah, one more day with you guys, then you're
one
done
more.
With me.
Nice.
All right, man. We look forward to it. Noodles, we'll catch you tomorrow. We're out of here. Yeah. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll
chat then.